Okay, so this next presentation is specifically about the PST file format SDK, which is something that I'll get into the details in a second. It's kind of a long presentation. I talk about each part of the SDK at some point or another. I'm going to try to kind of glance over the uninteresting stuff so we could focus on the stuff that people might actually use. Again, stop me if you have questions or if something interests you. Other than that, I'm going to try to blow through some of the early stuff to get us done before lunch is cold. So what is the PST SDK? It started as a personal project of mine as we started documenting the PST. Initially, I kind of used it as kind of a side project of mine to learn more about the next version of the C++ standard called C++OX. It targeted only VC10 and modern versions of GCC. I was trying to extensively use some of the new features like R-value references and lambdas and all this other crazy stuff. sorry. At some point, I told my boss about it, and it became an official Microsoft project, at which point I had to drop a lot of the C++ OX stuff because those compilers weren't out yet. We tried to release it roughly the same time as the PST spec came out. The idea was people trying to implement the spec could learn from a reference implementation or use reference implementation directly as they wanted to. It's on CodePlex. It's still being developed. Not entirely by me. Again, they want me to work on the next version of Outlook, but it's going slow. We're still making new features. I still try to fix bugs that come across because bugs annoy me. So diving in, what exactly is it? It is a cross-platform, so it works, hopefully, on all platforms out there. Cross-compiler. I've tested GCC and Visual Studio 9 and 10 for reading PST files. It's essentially completely a new implementation of the spec, similar to what we have for Outlook. The Outlook one is 300,000 lines. This is about 8K lines. It's header only, so there's no libraries to link or compile. It's built around the same kind of layers of abstraction I just got done talking about the LTP and the PST and the NDB. It follows the documentation very closely. So the idea was that you could kind of use the SDK at any one of these levels you were interested in. If you wanted to just sort of get to the messages and the tables, you could use at the higher layer. If you wanted to do some crazy, crazy stuff around recovering deleted items, you had to go kind of at a lower layer. You could dive in wherever you wanted to, whatever header file you needed. I don't know if anyone's actually done that, but, it's possible. And I also used Doxygen, which is a markup. You put in your source files, and it spits out some HTML documentation. So that's what it is. Requirements, you need a relatively modern C++ compiler. It uses the STL and templates and crazy stuff like that pretty extensively, so something from 15 years ago probably isn't going to work. It has some dependencies on Boost, which is a C++ library that's widely used in industry. I use the Boost library to generate the iterators used in PST SDK and some of the stream code for opening streams over properties, as well as some general stuff for compiler support and configuration. And if it doesn't work on what you use for your platform, I'll do the best I can to help. I've certainly tested a lot on the Windows platform. My hope is it works on Mac OS X and Linux. If you're working on some esoteric platform, I can't promise I'll make it work myself, but I'll do the best I can to help you with compiler errors and see where it goes. Okay, so how do you use it? You have to make sure that the directory is in your compiler's include path. Pretty obvious. You also have to make sure Boost is in your compiler's include path because the PST SDK headers will include Boost, and if Boost is not in your include path, it won't compile. If you met those two requirements, and I guess you have to have a modern compiler, then all you have to do is include the header file, and then you're good to go. There's nothing else to do. It's really that simple. I want it to be dead simple to use. You probably want to include that header file in your pre-compiled header if you're using one, because it's you don't want to compile it every time. But that's it. And again, stop me if you have any questions about anything. So the structure of it, what does it look like? It's laid out in five different layers. I'm going to touch on each layer individually. The only two real interesting ones are the disk layer down here and the PST layer up here. The middle ones, LTP and NDB, implement the heap and the blocks and the nodes. I'll brush on them, but I won't really go into depth. The util layer is a collection of utilities used kind of by everyone. Here's a breakdown of the lines of code. I wanted to show this because around 8K lines of code, the majority of it is in this the NDB layer. Another big chunk is in the LTP layer, and this is the disk structure. And only the PST layer you're probably using is pretty small. So kind of interesting. So I'll start with the util layer. What is the util layer? It contains a generic B-tree hierarchy. I talked about B-trees a lot in the file format. It comes up, I think, at least 3 or 4 times in the PST format. So there's a set of base classes that I use to easily implement B-tree lookups, and that lives in the util layer. There's an exception hierarchy, pretty straightforward. Errors get thrown. They're all defined here. There's a set of PST MAPI primitives. I've tried to keep the PST SDK independent of MAPI whenever I could. Some places it's just impossible. So where MAPI leaks in, it's generally in the util layer. And there's a bunch of general utility functions and classes. Okay, 3 different ones. B-tree hierarchy is implemented with a B-tree node, which is kind of the base class. It's a B-tree node leaf, the leaf version of a B-tree node, and a B-tree node non-leaf. So these base classes are implemented in the util layer, and the way it works is when I have a B-tree hierarchy I want to use, they virtually inherit from one of these base classes, and they override a couple basic functions like get child and get value, stuff like that. And then all of the lookup semantics and all of the iterator semantics are all in the base classes. So if you remember, the NBT and BBT lookups in the NDB layer are B-trees, the BTH are B-trees, the subnodes are B-trees. All that code uses the same set of base classes and the same set of iterators to get at the data. And all that is right here. So useful, lives here. A word about PST SDK MS struct. So one of the decisions that was made is I wanted to define a header file, disk.h, that had all of the structures that were laid out in the MSPST doc as actual C++ classes or structures, actually, that you could use and include in your code if you wanted to. The problem with this is that the MSPST, well, the real implementation is compiled with the Visual Studio Compiler. I wanted this to be cross-platform, but it turns out that not every compiler, in fact, most compilers, when they lay out structs in memory, do so differently. They have different padding rules. They have different alignment rules. And it varies on platform. It varies on architecture. And it is a nightmare. So it's really, really hard to have a header file that can be used that defines the structs in memory. And you are expecting to be able to read bytes from the disk and just blast them into memory into one of these structs. And, you know, it's really hard to do that cross-platform. And one of the ways that evolved to handle this is PST SDK MS struct, which for GCC is defined as this attribute, a GCC extension, to say try to lay out your structure as it does on Windows. And for otherwise, it's defined as nothing. So this is kind of a little hack to make GCC on non-Windows platforms act like GCC on Windows platforms, and GCC on Windows platforms tries to act like Visual Studio on Windows platforms. So that makes sense. And other platforms, you know, you may end up having to, or I, or someone has to, you know, end up falling back on pound defines to detect your platform and your version to make it work. And I guess the lesson here is don't define structures and expect to blast bits into memory. But that's how the real PST implementation does it. That's how I did it, because I thought it'd be useful to follow the documentation, and I regret it. Better to maybe implement utility functions to copy data into memory. So that's all I'll say about the util layer. Moving on. Disk layer is one of the interesting layers that you may want to work at if you're doing some really complex data mining in the PST, or you're the FBI or someone or whatever. So the disk layer has its own namespace. Everything's in the disk. The PST SDK disk namespace. I tried to implement every structure that was defined in MSPST, the documentation, as a structure in the header file here. Each structure is commented with a... Let me actually show you that. Do you guys see this? Probably not, huh? Actually, PSD, SDK, disk. Here's one random example. So can I view zoom text size largest? That did not work. That worked. Okay, so example of here's the documentation for the header structure. And here's all the fields. And see also MSPSD 226. So every structure in disk has kind of a cross-reference to the actual MSPST paragraph that defines it. So the idea was you'd be able to go back and forth, maybe use the disk.h directly if you're doing something clever. Okay, so in order to help combat that cross-platform issues I was discussing earlier, the disk layer has tons of static asserts next to every structure to assert the size and the location of various fields as they appear on the Windows platform. Visual Studio. So that's all the static asserts you see. The idea was if you move to another platform and you want to port it to, you know, I don't know, anything, and you go to compile the header, rather than getting random runtime errors, you'll get a bunch of compile time failures about how this structure isn't the right size, and you know kind of where to go to look to adjust the way it's compiled on your platform to match what's on the Windows. And the idea is once you get it compiling without asserting it, everything should work. The SDK should be fine, in theory. Okay, so we have this problem of ANSI versus Unicode versions of structures, and the MSPSD doc is the same way. There's ANSI PSD files, there's Unicode PSD files. Some of the structures are different, and I wanted to handle this uniformly at some layer. So the approach I took is using C++ templates and template specializations for differences. So every structure is a templated structure, and the parameter of the template indicates whether it's an ANSI or Unicode. And here's one example of that. So here's some documentation. Ignore that. That's all documentation stuff. Type name T, structure. I typed F the T to various values, and then I define the structure. Here's an MS struct, and here's the static asserts. So in the generic case, this is kind of what it looks like. T will be a ulonglong for a Unicode version. When these structures are used by the higher layers, they'll pass in whether the Unicode or ANSI. And the structure will be different based on that. Okay? So a more complicated example is when the actual layout of the structure varies depending on whether it's ANSI or Unicode. And one example is the block trailer. So if you look here, you'll see these two fields, the CRC and the block ID, for whatever reason, when they're in ANSI, they're in a different order than when they're in Unicode. So to handle this, I actually had to specialize the template based on whether it is a ulong value for ANSI or ulonglong for Unicode. So that's the approach I took. So tons of structures have specializations. More complex ones like header and the trailers are all like this. Some of the basic structures like back here, the NBT leaf entries will will just have generic templates because they're the same order of fields, and just all that varies is the size of some members. And that's kind of it. So so quick note of what you might want to use the disk layer for if you're doing work on it. If you want to do your own implementation of the PSD spec, you might want to consider starting the disk layer and building your own stuff on top of that. You can start with a header file at location 0. You get the location of the two B trees, and then you begin parsing the B trees, casting the data on disk to the appropriate structure in memory. You also might want to do some file scraping where you can use the AMAT pages to indicate what data is unused, and you can try to see if the data on the disk matches any other structure, and maybe find some interesting stuff. So that's the disk layer. The NDB layer is the largest and the most complex, so I'm going to kind of gloss over this stuff because honestly I don't really expect anyone to ever use this code directly. It's there mostly to create the node abstraction that the LTP layer uses to create the LTP abstractions, which exist only for the PSD layer. So what's in the NDB layer? Yes, that's what I just said. Simultaneously the most complicated and least interesting layer to work on. Its entire job is to expose this node object. The name of the class is node. And this layer is where we hide the ANSI versus Unicode differences. The database implementation inside this layer knows about it. It reads structures from disk, but the interface it exposes doesn't know about the differences. So it's kind of the translation and the abstraction between the two of them. DB context is where all this magic happens. It's the chief database abstraction. If you ever have to work with it, it's kind of like a factory class to create all the all the in-memory structures for the PST. And the way it works is it'll have a method to read block. It'll go to disk. It'll get the bytes as the appropriate ANSI versus Unicode, and it will return an in-memory block object that knows nothing about the ANSI Unicode differences. As a result, kind of everyone in the world will have a DB context object that they point to directly or indirectly to read other PST objects if it needs to. The idea is eventually DB context might be a database checkpoint instead of the actual database object. So you can create nested layers of checkpoints. So, and DB context has some methods for iterating over all the nodes in the file, which is useful if you want to see every message, for example, and it's used at the higher layers. So the page hierarchy is implemented in page.h, implements all the NBT and BBT pages that I kind of mentioned earlier. It's the first model of the B-tree hierarchy. It's used primarily by the DB context in order to get data in the file. No one else really uses it. So again, kind of glossing over, not that interesting, but if you want to read more, you can go in that file and see how we actually read the two B-trees and how we implement them. There's a similar block hierarchy for the different types of blocks, the blocks, the X-blocks, the subnode blocks. All this is in node.h. It's used only by the node in order to do the data that it has to do. Some of the blocks, like the external data blocks, will actually have a buffer in memory, an 8K buffer of the external data. Some of the other blocks, like the X blocks, will just have a DB context pointer in order to read the other blocks they need as they're requested. So, and the node itself will point to like a block. You can imagine there's a block hierarchy of classes. The node will point to a root data block class, which could either be an X block or a regular block, and there's logic to read the data. Not that interesting, but all that is in node.h. If you're implementing the PST yourself, it might be a useful reference. And the subnode block is another B-tree hierarchy where the subnode block has a root node and a leaf node, and it uses that good hierarchy in the util layer I talked about to do the subnode lookups. So nodes themselves, it's responsible for abstracting away the details of working with blocks and X blocks to give you a flat array of bytes. It generally just defers to the appropriate data block or subnode block if you look at the implementation. There's an interesting implementation detail, and this happens a lot in the PST SDK, where I have a stack-based class, and I also have a dynamically allocated implementation class, kind of the pimple idiom. It's not just to do the pimple. It's more to make it convenient to use, so you can make stack-based objects in addition to the class ones. There's one note I put in here about the copy semantics. There's what does it mean to copy a node object? So I decided that when you copy construct a node, it actually creates its own implementation class. They have separate node imples if you copy it in memory, so potentially more memory is moved around. There's also a concept of alias copy, and what happens there is you have two nodes that point to the same implementation class. And this comes up later. It's kind of looking forward to how transactions might work in the future. The difference is important when you copy nodes around, if you want to be modifying the same node implementation or not. So something to keep in mind, copy construct versus alias copy involves whether you're actually looking at the same physical memory object or two in-memory objects that refer to the same node that can be modified independently someday. Okay, moving on, LTP layer. The LTP, if you recall, builds some structures on top of the PST, or on top of the NDB, sorry, on top of nodes. Stuff like the heap and the B-tree on heap and the property context and the table context and the name ID map. So in the PST SDK, the LTP layer implements all these in-memory abstractions related to these structures as defined in the MSPST documentation, section 2.3. And this is kind of how it works. Down here is the node from the NDB layer indicated by a different color. Heap on node is built on top of that. B-tree on heap is built on top of that. And then up here, the property context uses that. Table context uses the B-tree on heap, and the name ID map uses that as well. This is all in the LTP layer. So starting with the heap on node. So the heap on node is a mechanism to subdivide the node into smaller allocations. It's described in the MSPSU documentation, section 231. I went over it a little bit the last hour. And in the PSD SDK, this is implemented in the heap and the heap input class in heap.h. Not much else to say. It's probably nothing you're going to want to use directly, so I'll move on. But it does all the stuff about the maps and the headers and reading the various blocks. BTH is similar. It's also in heap.h. It's another B-tree hierarchy, so it uses those base classes I described earlier. The way you get to a BTH in the PSD SDK is you first get the heap version of the node, and then there is a constructor, kind of a factory class on the BTH node object that'll give you there's a constructor, a factory method on the heap class to open a BTH from inside that heap. So, moving on. So one important thing that you do need to know about in the LTP layer is the concept of a property object. So a property object is a generic interface for reading properties from something which provides properties. And there are two basic things that provide properties in the PSD SDK, and it was convenient to have a symbol base class to read them both. And those two things, by the way, I'll discuss in a second, are property bags, property contexts, PCs, and table rows, individual table rows. And they both use this base class. So the point of this base class is to provide the simple reprop and reprop array methods, which take a template parameter of the type you want to read, and they take a method or a parameter of the actual property ID, the property tag you want to read. So those two are in the base const property object class, and they return the actual value. Reprop array is the mapping multivalued version of it. So the way const property object works is there are a bunch of virtual methods for readme property that's 1 byte length, readme property that's 2 bytes, 4 bytes, 8 bytes, readme variable length property. These are all virtual methods, and the way these properties are read is different for PCs versus TCs. One has to go to the row and maybe read a certain column and then go to the heap or a subnode, and for property bags, it's, you know, it does the BTH lookup and it finds the value. So the users of this const property object will implement it differently, but they can be treated uniformly at higher layers if necessary by just having const property objects. So it's important to know this interface because this is one of the interfaces which kind of leaks through to the higher layers. The higher PSD layers will have abstractions about reading certain useful properties on a message like a subject or, you know, but it doesn't have everything. It doesn't have every single conceivable property on it. And if you want to find or read one of these more esoteric properties, you have to kind of unwrap to the actual property object and then call your read property methods on that. Another thing the const property object provides is the stream interface using Boost and the Boost stream interfaces. So it lets you open a standard C++ IO stream over a property so you can do streaming operations. And there's a good example of how attachments takes advantage of this to make it pretty easy to save an attachment. So that's all in this base class. So one of the implementations is the property context. It's implemented as the property bag class in propbag.h. It inherits from const property object. It implements the virtual methods I talked about. It uses the BTH that I talked about earlier to actually do its work. And it's a pretty simple class. The other one is the table context. If you remember the huge, scary diagrams about tables, this is really complicated in terms of structure in the PST. The table and table impl are the same kind of heap and dynamic allocation structure that node and heap use. Table impl itself is a base class because it turns out there are multiple types of tables in the PST in terms of not just ANSI versus Unicode, but even in ANSI stores there have been changes over time over how the tables work. And basic table is the real base class where the implementation is. And the T here tells you the width of the row index. And what the table class does is provide an interface to get you a collection of const table row objects, which implement the const property object. There's iterators here, too, to iterate over the table rows. And yeah, that's about it. And finally, at the LTP layer is the implementation of the name ID map as described in MSPST247. It's probably too detailed to go into here, but the code, the data structure, our class is a name ID map. It's a name ID.h. It's a specific node that uses a BTH and a bunch of streams for GUIDs and strings to do name property lookup. Okay. Finally, we're here. Any questions up to this point? So I tried to rush through all that stuff so I have more time for this actual layer, which I think is where 99% of the people using the SDK will actually spend their time working on. The PST layer is the layer that actually provides the familiar abstractions that you may be used to working with in MAPI, in Outlook, in, you know, the terms are familiar. You have a class called PST. There's a class called Message. There's a class called Folder. There's a class called Attachment. And you can probably guess what these classes represent. They're built on top of the LTP types, but with the exception of that const property object thing I talked about, where you occasionally have to go to read certain properties, you really don't have to know anything about BTHs or PCs or TCs or name ID maps. Well, a little about name ID maps. So typically you'll be working here if you're using the SDK for doing any work. So this is, if all you knew was this layer, you'd be good to go. So I'm actually going to go into some code here as to how to use this layer. And again, please stop me if you have any questions on how to use any of these types. And a lot of what I show you here is also on the website. We'll get into that at the end. So starting with a PST object. At a high level, the PST object represents a store. You construct it with just a path to a PST. That's all you have to do. On an implementation, it's kind of a wrapper around the DB context from the NDB layer. So using a PST object, you have methods to open specific message objects, specific folder objects. It uses boost iterators to iterate over the folders and the messages in the store. So I mentioned earlier that the DB context provides a way to iterate over all the nodes. Well, using boost and the boost iterator library, I was able to really simply write a filter iterator to only filter over nodes of a certain type, and a transform iterator to translate the iterators to message and folder objects. So long story short, using a PST, you can say message underscore begin, message underscore end to get you all the messages, and the same thing for folders. The PST object has a couple accessor methods to get it some common properties like the name. And besides that, that's pretty much it. It also manages the name ID map for the store. I said earlier, there's exactly one node, there's exactly one name ID object. So how do you use it? So you include PST.h, assuming you have your compile include path. And let's assume you have a do stuff method that takes a folder. To construct your PST, you just do this. PST, that's the name of the class. MyFile is a variable, and this is the one parameter, MyFile.PST. It assumes you have MyFile.PST in your current directory. And that's it. That's how you open a PST. So now I want to actually do stuff. So here's a for loop, which declares a folder iterator, which is a subtype defined in the PST class. And it's called iter. MyFile.FolderBegin is the beginning iterator. Does not equal MyFile.FolderToEnd plus plus iter. Inside the loop, we call doStuff star iter. So what this does is for every folder in the PST, it'll call this doStuff method, which does something. You can also open the root folder, which takes no parameters. It just returns you a folder object that represents the root folder. And obviously, we'll discuss folders in a second. And you can also open a folder by name. So you can say open the inbox folder. And this function actually is very simple, very similar to this. It just stops when it actually finds the right folder. So that's it. That's how you use a PST. Any questions? Oh, okay. So start talking about folder objects. So folder is it's a wrapper around the property bag for the folder. It also wraps and abstracts the three tables that a folder has. If you remember the diagram from the last presentation, it talks about how there's a contents table and a hierarchy table and a associated contents table. Search folder is similar, but it doesn't have a hierarchy table. It's what MAPI says. And what folder does is it provides iterators over the messages in the folders, which are themselves transform iterators over the constro table iterator as part of the table. And it also provides a way to iterate over the subfolders. It also has similarly has some predefined accessor methods for some common folder properties, easy to use. It's designed to be pretty dead simple to use, hopefully. So how do we use folders? So code. Again, let's pretend we have a do stuff, which takes a message, a do stuff, which takes a folder. And let's assume we have a folder object somehow. Maybe you got it from the PST object from the last couple slides. To iterate over all of the folders in a folder, you do your iterator loop calling subfolder.begin, fold.sub underscore folder underscore begin, get you an iterator to the first folder. Subfolder end, get you the last one, and you just do your standard C++ iteration. You call do stuff a star iterator, and that will give you a folder object of one of the subfolders. And that's how you iterate over all the subfolders. And that's it. I hope that's simple. Similar to the PST object, you can also open a subfolder by name. Unlike the PST object, which will search the whole store for finding a folder by name recursively, this is a non-recursive operation. This will only open direct subfolders of this folder. And this example, you know, I have a folder called Pictures of My Daughter that returns folder Leah, who is my daughter. Messages work similar. You have a message iterator, message underscore begin, not equal message underscore end, plus plus, and that calls your do stuff method with a message. And that's how you iterate over all the messages in a folder. Okay. So down to message objects. How do we use messages? It's getting even simpler now. Message is just a simple wrapper around a property bag. And I guess the two tables, the attachments and recipients. You have accessor methods for getting common message properties. There are iterators for iterating over all the attachments of a message. And there's an iterator pair for iterating over all the recipients of a message. Using a method, or using a message. So we have our fake do stuff that takes an attachment. We have a do stuff that takes a recipient. Here we magically got a message. And here's some examples of using the accessor methods to get properties. The first three are getting a string version of the subject body and HTML body. The next two are showing how to use a property stream. You create a prop stream object called body stream, and then you call m the message dot open body stream, and that'll construct a property stream. HTML body stream is similar, except the method is called open HTML body stream. And prop stream at that point is kind of like it's a standard I/O stream. In C++, you can use it anywhere you'd use an I/O stream. Some methods to get the count of recipients and the count of attachments. And these, by the way, all the slides I've shown you aren't everything that you can do. There's some other methods I haven't brought up. I just kind of, for example purposes, showing you this stuff. And here's how to work with attachments. If the number of attachments is greater than zero, you can get the attachment iterator. Iterate over the attachments. If the recipients, and here's a similar for loop for working with recipients, we do stuff with recipients and attachments. Okay, any questions on the messages? Yes? I don't remember exactly what methods I have on there. But if you modules PST message classes functions, I want the PST message. So what do we have? We have attachment begin, attachment end, recipient begin, recipient end, get subject, has subject, get body, open body stream, has body, get HTML body. A lot of stuff about the body. Size of the message, number of attachments, number of recipients. Get the various tables, get the ID. So no, there's nothing specifically about those properties. Maybe there should be. So if you do want to get them, sorry. Yes. So what you have to do, yep, is you call this get property bag method that hands you a property bag from the LTP layer. Then you call read prop with the type that you want and the ID. So yeah, I mean, I'd like to add more of the common methods. I don't want to add every possible method because then that makes the class bloated and scary. So I'd be happy if I just had like the 10 most common ones and people had to know property bag. Moving on, attachment objects. Attachments are wrappers around the property bag. Accessor methods to access the most common methods of an attachment. One special thing is there is an is message, because one special case for being an attachment is if you have an embedded message. And the PSD SDK directly supports this by allowing you to convert an attachment object, which you get from the attachment table, to a message object. So it has an is message, Boolean. If is message is true, you can call open as message, which will return you a message version of that attachment. It's the best solution I can come up with to convert attachments to messages, you know, as opposed to having maybe message being a derived version of the attachment object and having some weird class hierarchy. It didn't quite work because not all messages are derived from attachments, so this is the best approach I can come with. But the message it returns is the same message class that is the message I just talked about. That's a upper-level message. It's the same in every way. It could have its own attachment table, its own embedded messages, infinitely recursive. So working with attachments. Do stuff with takes a message. You open your attachment somehow, probably by using the message object. There's a get file name. There's a method to get you the bytes of the attachment directly as a vector, C++ vector of bytes, which you can do stuff with it. There is a way to open the attachment as a byte stream, which is useful. And this is what I was saying, if the attachment has a message, you can open the attachment as a message and then call your do stuff message method on it. So this is an example of how to save an attachment to disk using the byte stream mechanism. It takes four lines. Of those four lines, three lines are how to open the actual output file. So if you have an attachment object, you can get the file name that you want to save it as, that's embedded as part of the attachment, you know, foo.jpg, whatever. The standard, so this converts the file name, which is a W string, I try to make everything Unicode in the PSD SDK, to a std string, because the OF stream in C++, the standard only takes std strings, or C strings, rather. So I had to convert it to a string, then here I convert it to a C string, open for output, open for binary, C++ stuff. But once you have the output string, you just go new file, the string operator, to an attachment. And that streams it to the file, and that's it. So finally, recipient objects. Recipient object is the simplest of all the objects. It's a very small wrapper around a const table row. So it just has a couple accessor methods for getting the name, the email address, the type of the recipient, all here. And if you remember, you get the recipients from iterators on the message. I think that's it. That's the PST layer. Are there any questions on working with the PST layer? Yes. Okay. Well, let me get through the last couple slides, and we'll take some questions. So, some resources you can use when working with the PST SDK. Documentation. If you download the package, there's a documentation folder. It includes the latest version of the MSPST documentation at the time the SDK was released. I wanted to include it because I reason that perhaps someday I may be changing the order of the sections if I had new stuff, and I wanted to have a version of the documentation that matched the section of the SDK, if that makes sense. So it's included. There's also the built Doxygen documentation. Does anyone actually use that? Help? No? You've looked at it? That took me forever to do. I hope someone somewhere is getting some value out of this documentation, because everything in the PSD SDK is marked up to use Doxygen and generate some nice documentation about how to use it. Oh, cool. Very cool. The last kind of basic resource is at least the PSD SDK specific resources, I should say. I should add that, you know, PSD SDK I don't think is officially supported by anyone but me. It's too bad. But the MSPSD documentation is supported by all the resources that were mentioned earlier in the day. PSD SDK is documented. There's a documentation section of the CodePlex site which has a lot of the examples that I went through here, and try to write some good documentation there. If you find something unclear on that site, you can comment right there, and I'll get an email, and I'll try to address it. So that's the documentation resources, those three things. As far as samples go, the distribution has, at present, 5 samples, 6 if you count the unit tests. I won't go through them all, but they do various things at various layers. I wrote all of them except for the PST attachment. We had someone else wrote that. The unit tests is it's a little unstructured, but it has some good examples of how to use the code if you want to do that. And that's all included in the distribution. And where to get help. The best place that you can go to get help is to go to the discussion page on the site. And when you post a discussion, I get an email. And then when I get the email, I usually look into it right away and try to help you out. So that's the best way to get a hold of me and anyone else who might be able to help you there. It's also good to have it there because then people could perhaps look at other issues that people have encountered on the site. And that's all I have. So are there any questions on the PST file format or the PST SDK, how to use it or anything? Yes? Yeah. Yes. The question is, what C++ LUX features am I using, and is it possible to use it without it? And yes, when we went to release it publicly, I went through the SDK and made it possible to work on compilers that didn't have these features. I removed most of the Lambda stuff because it wasn't typically necessary, and just wrote hand-rolled functors. And the biggest one that was there was a bunch of places where I used auto, and I just pulled those out too. The biggest one was the R-value references. There, a lot of the objects were R-value enabled for quick move constructors, and which obviously didn't work on nullable clients. So, with a bunch of ifdefs, using the boost config library has some predefined macros to tell you if R-values work or not. So, ifdef R-value is enabled, I'll have a constructor for R-value references. And typically, there's an idiom where you can have, instead of taking objects by const reference, you can take objects by value, and it'll work for both R values or non-R values. So everything works on most. VC9 was tested, GCC 4.2 and 4.3 work without the C++ LUX features, without the pound defined for them. So, yeah. Initially, I didn't plan on, I was going to make the world convert C++ LUX with my SDK that everyone had to use. And, you know, my boss said that was a terrible idea, so. What platform are you on?
Linux.
Nice. Well, I mean, you could always install GCC 4.4, which has most of the stuff.
Yeah, I use our platform Linux file with a fixed version of the GCC. So you can use
it. Yeah. So. Yeah, yeah, I guess cooler heads prevailed, and I so it should work. I mean, when you say you have your custom version of GCC, I get a little nervous that maybe there might be some quirks, but it should be pretty easy to work through. But yeah, it works on VC9 and it works on the stock version of GCC 4.2 without any R value, without any stuff from C++ LUX enabled. Okay? Any other questions? Yes? Okay, the question is, first question is, password-protected TST files, at what level is the encryption enabled? There is no encryption for password protection. Password protection is a property on the message store object. So what happens is when you set a password on a file, the CRC hash of the password gets stored as a property on the PST object. When you go to open the PST, the MSPST code would ask you to type in a password, and would see if the CRC matched. And if the CRC didn't match, it would say, no, I'm sorry, that's the wrong password, and it would exit out. So there's no real actual protection for passwords. it's what counted as protection in 1995. It really doesn't count today. So the PSD SDK doesn't know anything about passwords. It just ignores them. It can open password protected PSD files without any need to put in the password. Same thing for encryption. There's something that the PSD calls encryption, and it's basically like a ROT 13 style where it does a CRC thing, and that counted as encryption in 1995, but it's a joke, you know, in 1996, basically. So we stopped calling it encryption, and the PSD decrypts the files without any trouble. So, is your question? Yes. Yes. So if you knew the property ID, which I think is documented somewhere in one of the PSD docs, other stuff about the password. Like, you could look up what the CRC hash is and validate yourself if you want to enforce the password. But if you want to, I guess. Does the same joke apply to Word and Excel? I don't know, actually. Might want to ask the Word and Excel guys. I'm not sure what their password protection strategy is, but the PSD one is, I actually lobby to remove it because I think that it provides like a false sense of security to our customers. Oh, my PSD is password protected. Someone steals my laptop, they can't get into my PSD, which is not the case. You know, So I'd like to remove it just to remove that false sense of security, but that's unpopular. And what do you do with down-level clients that already have password protected? That's kind of a whole hornet's nest. But if we ever came up with a new file format, like a Unicode++, it may not have PST password protection as it's implemented today. I'd want to do it as a real password protection. So, any other questions? No? Yes, thank you.